5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the new Panic Room. It's the show other shows want to be, and the show that authors want to be on. All-new Panic Room radio show is brought to you by HellboundBooks.com.
Well, good evening, dear listener. Welcome to the new Panic Room, episode 82. It is, I'm going to have to check it, actually. I think we're still in February. Yeah, February the 22nd, 9:30 Central. Welcome to yet another show. More shenanigans, as it says on the blurb. So, welcome. I tell you, I've missed it this week, so I'm going to bring us straight on. I think. Yeah, why not? I was going to have a long rambling monologue, but I thought, no, I'm going to bring Extinct because I have missed you this week. It's been a quick week. I mean, it seems like just yesterday you were doing the show, but how have you been?
I have been great. I've been wonderful. I really thought you were going to do a cute little segue, and I was going to be, you know, speaking of shenanigans or something. That would have been good.
Well, every time I do what I think is a clever segue, I get into trouble because it just.
Oh wait, it's clever.
It's insulting mostly. So.
Well, there was the 1 week speaking of 69, and then you introduced me, so that was a little.
Yeah, there was that.
Odd.
I think there was also the. Speaking of trailer trash, I think was another one. So I decided against it this week. I thought, no, let's just be try and be a little bit. I tell you, speaking of being professional, here's something we've not had for a long time. Here we go. Now, a little bit of dead air. just really for sentimentality's sake, back to the original shows. We used to relish our day. A bit of dead air was great, wasn't it?
I am glad that we can't even dig up those shows anymore. They are gone for good. They are burned. They are gone because they were just painful. Just painful. They really were.
But we did, from little acorns do mighty oaks grow, as they say. You've got to start somewhere. Sadly, you know, your learning curve is recorded for forevermore. There's no escaping it. When the show has surpassed Howard Stern's show, somebody will dig those up. Oh, this is what you sounded like in your first show. Dear me.
Yes. Oh God. Oh, I used to cringe. I seriously. And you know what? It must say something about the show now because I can listen, and I don't cringe. So that right there tells me that.
I will listen back, and we are quite entertaining. If I do say so myself, and it takes a lot to entertain me. I have to say.
It does.
So unless it's a visual medium, I'm fine. TV movie, that's fine. But if it just I have to be doing something if I'm listening. I can listen on. It's a damn sight better than it was. I can tell you that.
No, it's funny that you say that. You know, you have to be entertained because as soon as you know there's any kind of lull or whatever, I can hear you start to fiddle with stuff. And if you were closer to me, I would be like kicking you. Like, would you stop? Be still.
I really am. I'm like a 4 year old sometimes. I just fidgeting.
Yes.
I get bored so quickly. It's frightening. You think as you get older that gets better, but I've got worse. It's funny. I have, you know, occasionally have meetings with. I don't go out much, to be honest. I choose not to interact with people a lot because it's funny. I can be talking to people, and I can. It's almost like I can hear the button going off in my head. It's like I'm bored with you now, and then you've got a feign interest in what this, you know, dullard's saying for another 5-10 minutes, and just like. Okay, you know, I was interested. It lasted, you know, you got a good 10 minutes out of me. I'm really bored with you now.
Yeah,
to be honest.
Yeah.
Usually, you know, when I'm talking to other parents at kids' parties, I hate them. Because you get all the other parents, just go away. I'm just, you know,
I'm fed up with you. I always felt like a bad parent because, you know, they always want to talk just about their kids and. I don't. I mean, I don't even like my own.
Yeah.
Okay, I can't say that. I love them, but I don't always like them.
It is, you can love them, but no, they are not always likable. No, I guess.
No,
well, I think
no.
The thing for me is that, you know, yeah, they talk about the kids and he's allergic to that and he won't eat that, doesn't like that.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, my kids are fine. They're allergic to nothing. They will eat anything. They're just, you know, because there's nothing wrong with them. Yeah, I just feel like either, you know, I'm lying, you know, that I'm, you know, you know, there's something really wrong with them, and I'm covering it up. And it's like, no, I'm sorry. I start making shit up. Oh no, yeah, she is lactose intolerant. Just to fit in.
Just something.
Just to
fit in.
Oh, you put that bread bun down. You're allergic. Oh, well. And they'll always say, you know, can she eat that? Well, if it'll fit in her mouth. Yes, probably. If it's not vegetables, if it's not veg, she'll eat it. But it's just like, the killer for me is, you know, and you invariably get around to, well, what do you do? And I said, well, yeah, I'm a writer. And it will kill a conversation. I might as well say, look, I'm a paedophile. I'm a professional child molester. And I would probably get more conversation out of that. Probably wouldn't get invited to many kids' parties, but, you know, it's and they were just, I had one guy actually say to me one, he just looked at me, so I don't know what to say to that. So great. Which is why I just, you know, I tend to switch off at these things. Just like,
yeah.
You know.
That's weird
people.
That is sad. Yeah.
Yeah. But then again, you get the other side of the coin. I think anybody who's we have a lot of writers who listen to the show, you know, and we've all had this, you know, and suddenly, I was planning to write a book, you know, like it's like something you can do in a weekend, and then they start telling you about it, like, you know, maybe you'd want to write this. No, you write your own fucking lame idea, bucko. I've got this really good idea, you know, about a guy who's, you know, his family had killed, and he goes on a mission of revenge. That was Death Wish, wasn't it? No, it wasn't.
I actually had a friend of mine one time that wanted me. She came up with this idea, and she's like, I think it'd be awesome if you wrote this. And I was like, you know what? I'm really not that good. She didn't ask anymore.
I mean, if it's that awesome, I mean, you know, if it's that great, either pay me, I'll write it for you.
No, it
wasn't. Not a problem. You pay me enough money, I will write anything you want me to write, you know. Or B, write it yourself if it's that good, you know.
Right.
You know.
That's an argument that I will take up, actually. You know, people say, you know, just write. And, you know, everybody... No, I don't agree with that. I don't think everybody should write. I really don't. Maybe that's... I just don't, because I've read some really bad stuff out there. And I don't think everybody is cut out to be a writer.
No, I mean, if somebody has an idea that's strong, you sit down and write it. I mean... You know, if you want to write, you know, but don't expect to suddenly be, you know, Stephen King overnight, because, you know, it's like anything. It's a craft. It's a job. You know, we all start. It's like with the radio show. We were shit when we started, and hopefully we've improved. But you only improve by, you know, keep on. I mean, you know, there's some great writers who were, you know, tossed to start with. I mean, some of my early stuff is cringeworthy, and I'm by no means, you know, I'm you know, every day I'm learning. You know, and I think a lot of it's about expectations. I mean, you get, certainly with self-publishing these days, you know, people think, right, I've written my book, so I've written it now, I've written my whatever 60,000-80,000 words, and it looks like a book. It's got lots of words in it, and they're all joined together.
It looks like a book. It must be a book. Wrong.
Exactly. And because you can self-publish it, you know, people do. And then, you know, suddenly, well, why am I not a multimillionaire? You know, and well, you know, there is a process. You know, and I don't know. I think a lot of it's about expectations. I mean, the old days, you know, you'd write your book and polish it up and send it to a publisher or an agent, and they'd come back and say, as happened to me in the distant past, you know, this is a bag of shit. You know, they flower it up a little bit nicer than that, but pretty much, you know, this is just, you know, average rubbish. And that's how you learn. You go back and you write something else, you know, and you just keep going. You know, these people just write one book badly, self-publish it, and then get pissy because, you know, people either don't buy it or don't like it, you know. But
right.
So great piece of advice I heard actually from Stephen King, funny enough, was just keep writing. If that's what you are driven to do, then do it. You know, if you want to write, you write, and you just you learn and you polish your. It's just like being, I don't know, like being a surgeon or a chef or anything. You know, a lawyer, whatever. You learn. You never stop learning. So anyway, I'm boring myself now. It's just too serious.
No, you're not.
this is way too. Oh, I got a new. I was bored the other day. Here we go. See what you think to this little jingle for absolutely nothing.
You're only supposed to blow the bloody doors off.
This is the South Preservation Society.
Well, apart from having a round of Name That Movie, I don't know what else to do with that, but I like it. It's kind of cool. So, you have no idea, do you, at all?
No idea at all.
It was an iconic British movie from the, I think it was from the 60s, 70s, with obviously Sir Michael Caine. So, anybody listening, if you want to ring in or email, messaging or whatever, name that movie people.
I was actually thinking that whole time, should I know what we're doing right now, because I had no clue at all. I didn't.
Well, do you know, sometimes we have little segments, and I felt we need a strap line for the jingle. We need something to do with it, so
right. Well, I need my Xtina's baseball corner jingle really, really quickly, because
We have that.
I know.
Strike one.
I've two words to say to that. Shite.
Now, what's the other one?
Shite.
There you go. Welcome to Baseball Corner.
I know, and I don't have a whole lot to say, so it's not going to bore you too much, but I'm excited because tomorrow is the first game of spring training for the Blue Jays. So, woohoo, I'm going to be, you know, excited and, you know, wearing my baseball hat, and I just can't wait. I can't wait. So, and it's just spring training, but I'm still super excited, and I'm boring. Are you sleeping? You can't sleep yet. I mean, it was only 2 seconds, so.
I was just looking at stuff on my phone. So are you done now?
Yes, I am.
Good. So, hey, moving on swiftly from the boring rubbish, what have we got on the show this evening?
Oh, see, why did you do it like that? Okay, we have, romantic suspense author and poet Jennifer Fay. And we also have horror author and four-time Bram Stoker Award nominee Jeff Strand. So do we have a jingle that does like applause? I want the applause right now, like a bunch of clapping and whistling. And can we get one of those?
So who's that for?
that's for our guests, of course. You know, we'll do that.
We will introduce Jennifer Fay, who is a writer, obviously, a romantic suspense and poet writer. It sounds quite the combination. So yeah, okay, let's do that. We'll bring Jennifer. Jennifer, how are you this evening?
I'm great, thank you.
Good. Do you feel suitably cheered on?
I do, definitely. Thanks for
fantastic.
The applause.
You're welcome. You're welcome. The you know the everybody here in the studio is just thrilled to have you on the show. So, Jennifer Fay is here to talk to us about her book, Loving Her Until Infinity, which was released last year, yeah? There's no tagline. It's a book without a tagline, which is unique in many ways. So you're going to have to tell us a little bit about the taglineless book.
is that I actually wrote two novels for this. There's two different versions, like alternate stories. One, this is the mystery version, and the other one is the erotica version. But I love this one. It was a lot of fun writing it.
The same story, but sort of fraught with two different genres, yeah?
The main characters are the same. In one, the main character is like a flash artist, and in the other one, she's a jewelry maker. So, you know, whole different plot line, but the first, about the first page or two was the same in each book. Until I branch off and do a different thing. I was kind of thinking of those choose your own adventure books. And
I remember those.
I
was like, oh, I had to do an alternate story. So,
actually more reminded me of like those two Stephen King books. He did Desperation and then what was the other one? That was the same characters, but they were just different.
Oh.
They were the same name.
Oh, Desperation was.
I've read a couple.
Don't read Desperation. If you're listening, Steve, I'm sorry. It was not one of his best. And it was. I don't think I finished it.
You'll have to finish the girl who loved Tom Gordon.
Oh, I loved that. You know, I saw a post just recently, and it was asking, you know, what book did you not?
What's that?
No, I think we've lost Xtina. Are you there?
I'm here.
Can you hear me, Jennifer?
Yeah, I can hear you.
You can hear me. I don't know where Xtina's gone. So we had this last week. She'll be back. Yes, I mean the girl. I mean, I came to that sort of. It's actually Xtina that said you've got to read because it's about baseball, and I find the whole thing very dull. But it was a great story, you know. I mean, there's not many authors can take a have one character carry pretty much the whole story. So Gerald's Game was the same, you know. It was pretty much the one woman. I don't know if you have a spoiler alert if you've not seen it or read it. One woman strapped, handcuffed to the bed, and it was just what was going on in her head. It was incredible. It was a great, great book. So, but yeah, Desperation. I just like, what is going on? I mean, it started off reasonably well, but it just all got very, very odd. I don't know. I had no idea what was going on. But,
yeah.
I mean, I'm a big, you know,
Stephen
King fan.
My grandmother lived down the street from him when he was growing up.
Oh wow!
She was a little boy when one of her family was a teacher. Yeah.
Excellent. So what was he like as a child?
He had some story he had been writing, and the teachers were so concerned. And one of the teachers says, "Oh, that's just little Stevie King." I always remember that story. One of my aunts told me about. They live right in Durham. They live right down the street from them.
That is so cool. Yeah, I don't know what happened. I was there the whole time, and you know, you guys just couldn't hear me. So and I can't blame AT&T. I don't know what the heck it is. It happened last week too, but I am back.
It did.
And I was blathering. I was blathering about, people often talk about their the book Insomnia, that they didn't think it was a very good Stephen King book. And you know what?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't mind it. I read it, and I didn't think it was that bad. But I don't know.
It was sort of middling for me, was Insomnia. It was like, Tommyknockers. I mean, even King hates Tommyknockers. I mean, that was just like a lot of, you know, I don't know, but I mean, when you compare it with the likes of, you know, classics like Salem's Lot and The Stand, Firestarter was always been one of my favorites. Christine, you know, that absolutely. It's funny. I was actually a student when Christine came out, and I actually bought the paperback and tucked to my bed for I think 2 days solid. Just to read. Yeah. I missed lectures and everything. I just sat in bed for two days and read this book.
It's funny. My name is, you know, Christina, of course, but I used to, all during school, I would tell people it was Christine, like the Stephen King car. I mean, that's what I would tell people. You know, it's Christine, like the Stephen King car.
Right.
Yeah.
That was always creepy. Yeah, I always liked creepy things. So I want to hear more about your book, Jennifer, and you have a reading for us, don't you?
Yes, I do. Would you like me to start reading it?
I would love that, yes. Of course, it's my favorite time. I get to drink more when the guests are reading.
Time
okay.
for the bottle.
So, Love and Hurt Until Infinity, the Mystery Version, Chapter 1. The man saw her get on the Amtrak train, heading north like he was. Darkened eyes widened, mouth agape, with a lone drop of drool rolling off the corner. She was perfect, a remarkable resemblance to his idol. A new interest had him by the balls. His daily newspaper, forgotten, rested on his lap as he watched the young woman sit in the seat in front of him. This girl wore a brown skirt and a paisley patterned baby doll top with mint green hues. Her bodacious cream breast bulged out of the bra section of the cotton top. One spaghetti strap was held in place with a silver safety pin, perhaps out of hurried fashion. Did the girl not know how to sew? This saddened him. He smirked to himself as she sat down, keen eyes on the other golden safety pin, doing nothing to cover her cleavage. The woman had a lavish amount of coppery golden hair and slightly above shoulder length, set in waves as if she had slept on curlers all night long. As he thought to himself, she had to be old-fashioned. That in his women. Those perfect violet eyes caught his attention before she sat down. Could her name be Elizabeth? He had a fetish for that name. He thought about the poster of Elizabeth Taylor on his living room wall, yet the eyes weren't the right color. I don't care if her eyes aren't those greenish-blue unsparkling eyes, because I can see she possesses the brilliant complexion. And she does have the large, perfect eyelids. That finely formed, lofty neck is going to make me want to fuck her hard, he thought. He spied her between one of the seats, taking notice of her inked tattoo on the back of her neck where their hair didn't cover, infinity. Yes, he would love her to infinity and back to do it all over. As he lingered, his nose caught a whiff of her love's baby soft perfume. He smiled to himself, lips curled. Old fashioned for sure, he thought. He peered over for another glimpse, this time managing a sneak peek down that ample cleavage towards the darkness beyond. Nice and plump, perhaps velvety soft like the last one had been. He frowned on the fact it wasn't in the cards to be with Xenia. She wasn't meant to be his infinity. He watched the woman with intense thoughts about her figure. She's not quite anorexic, but maybe I could ask her to lose some weight, he thought. The mere thought of this girl was getting his penis hard. Control yourself, Jim, he thought. You're on the fucking Amtrak train, goddammit. Jim kept a close eye on the woman as the Amtrak continued to their destination, a small southern town, St. Ebony, town on Earth, according to Jim. Jim wasn't really his name, just a nickname people knew him for. Jim was actually an alternate identity he had given himself years ago.
Very good. You know, and I think, you know, I can speak as a man, you know. I think most of us at one time or another had an unwanted erection on a train.
Oh, my God. We should take a poll now.
Steady on. Pardon the pun. Matron. Yeah, okay. If people want to call in and tell us that. There it is. Unwanted erection on a train story. Well, it's I was going to tell a story. I used to ride the bus to school, to high school every day. I'm going to leave that story hanging. I'm just going to leave that right there, shall I?
You started it. You have to tell us the story now, don't
moving
you?
Moving on.
Moving no. on, yeah.
Moving on swiftly. Fine. So, Jennifer, I mean, I'm very intrigued about the idea of running the same story, but from different sort of genres. I know, obviously, you know, a great friend of the show, E.L. James, who we do love.
Oh, God.
Written 50 Shades of Grey from the point of view of Christian Grey. Fuck knows why. It was bad enough Anastasia's point of view, let alone, you know, talk about flogging a dead horse. I mean, look, ELJ, you've made your money. Just retire. Just stop it.
Wasn't every single one done by in Christian's like point of view? I mean, you know,
it was more from her point of view. No, the new one is called Christian.
Oh, yeah,
his point of view. So his you know, his justification for abusing the young girl, really. So Jennifer, so why was it that the story was, you know, in your mind sort of like a dual personality thing? It had to be told from two points of view, or what made you do? This is something I've never come across before. So how did this happen?
It's really you kind of get her point of view throughout the story, and then his point of view also. So it's kind of like a mixture, you know, a little bit of both. Yeah, and then like I have them thinking their thoughts a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And this one I had to do research on. I researched Elizabeth Siddal, the Pre-Raphaelite muse.
Mm-hmm.
That,
right,
that
mm-hmm.
was really fun to put that into the book. I mean, I won't spill much about that, but...
yeah. I would love to talk to you about poetry, because I saw on when I was on, you know, when I was stalking you, I saw on your Amazon page that you write a lot of poetry as well.
I do. I've published quite a lot of poetry books. And the funny thing was, I started out, I still think it's free verse. And then I, over the last couple months, I learned to rhyme a little better.
Mm-hmm.
And so, which I don't always rhyme, but certain poems I'll rhyme. But I'd say it's free verse.
I think poems have to rhyme, in my humble opinion.
Right.
I just...
Yeah.
It's not, it doesn't rhyme, it's just words, to be honest.
No, well, see, I envy people who can do free verse, because I can't. And I know that sounds silly, because it I don't know, do you think it's easier to free verse than it is to rhyme? Because I cannot do it. I actually sat down, I read this, a friend of mine's poetry book, and she does free verse, and it was so amazing, and I walked away from that thinking, I can never do that, what she did. You know, I can't. And I gave it a shot. I'm like, I'm just going to try it here. And the next thing I know, mm-hmm. I'm rhyming, so I can't.
Right. With free verse, I just sit down and I'll just write, and I'll keep writing. And some days I'll, like a day I go down to visit my kids, I'm down there writing while I'm waiting for them to show up, and here I've done like sometimes I can do 30 poems in a day easily, just writing.
That's,
you know, I just and I'm thinking a lot about, you know, life and just raw emotions that go into it, and I've written quite a lot on my mother, who passed away to colon cancer about this June. It's going to be 17 years and just, so I've written a lot of poems about my mother, or, you know, some poems might have God in it. I mean, they're not super religious, but I've written some. And then poems on love, and just, I don't know, anything that's happened to me, I've found myself writing about it in the form of poetry.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely, for me, it's always been a way to kind of purge anytime anything you know, if bad is going on or, you know, a bad heartache or something like that, you know, being able to get it out in poetry. And I feel better. I do. Which is interesting because I can still go back and I can read, you know, a poem that I wrote when I was, you know, in the middle of something horrible. And it's still, you know, it's almost like a knife that stabs you, but it doesn't stab you as hard as the first time, I suppose. And I do think it's a very, it's purging, you know, and I think everybody should do it. Everybody should be a poet. James is a poet.
Right.
He says he's not, but he wrote a lovely poem about dying, but it was still lovely.
It was the one and only poem, the first and the last poem I will probably ever write. But
it was really good.
And I only did that because Xtina cajoled me into doing it for some anthology or other. So I felt
and it
obliged,
was really good,
to be honest.
Yeah, and it didn't rhyme, though. You didn't rhyme.
No.
Did you?
No,
you
didn't.
No. Yeah, see?
No.
So was it even a poem in your own words? You said it has to rhyme. So.
Well, I'm not saying maybe it wasn't a poem. It was just a string of words I threw to you. I don't know.
It was good. I liked it, though.
A dark and sinister poem, you know, if it rhymes, I think that would sort of, you know, take away.
I've written some dark ones.
Oh, I don't know.
And did they rhyme?
Some fictional poems.
Yeah.
Oh, did they rhyme? No, I don't think these ones did too much.
No, I think when you're trying to rhyme, I think, yeah, if you're trying to be dark and you know, rhyming would just kill it.
I disagree. I am working on my latest poetry, I hate the word collection, so I'm not going to call it a collection. Poetry narrative is what I call it.
It is a collection of poems, though, isn't it, really?
Shut up.
Yeah. Poems collected together.
Your poetry's really good, though. I mean,
I hate that word, though.
It's amazing how well you can rhyme in your poems. It's like, oh, well,
There are
your poetry books. They were good.
Oh, thank you so much. There are so many dark ones in this newest collection. I mean, I think even darker than Dark Musings, and that's hard to do. But I don't think that the rhyming took away from the creepiness of some of the poems. So, I did do a creepy poem one time it was a Christmas anthology, and so I did this creepy little girl who's killing her family at Christmas time. And it rhymed, but she sets the house on fire, and it's because she wanted a different dolly than the one she got. That was the, you know, idea behind the poem.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I know. Little girls are creepy, you know. They really, they can be.
Yes, they're terrifying. They really are terrifying.
I do have a creepy little boy story, though. My son, when he was younger, you know, and we used to go to church. We were in church 3 times a week, you know, so I don't know where he got this, but he was probably about 4 years old, and me and my daughter decided we were going to kind of torture, tickle him, you know, and I had his legs, and she had his arms, and he couldn't move, and he was just thrashing about all over, and all of a sudden, he got so mad, he started screaming, "I hope you rot in hell! I hope you rot in hell!" And, oh, my God, I remember we dropped him, and we just kind of, like, backed away, and all I was thinking was, I'm keeping my door locked tonight.
Yeah.
I'd have got him straight down the orphanage, to be honest. Drop him off at the orphanage on the way home.
He has made it now to age 14, and he has yet to kill us, so I think we're safe.
Well, it's funny. I mean, speaking of regular listen to the show. I mean, India's been on the show. She's nearly 9 now, bless her. But she was probably about 4-ish, maybe 5. It's maybe something about that age. And she'd been watching. Was it Sleeping Beauty? She'd been watching, and she asked, you know, why was she you know, in the coffin and all the rest of it. And so I, you know, told her the story and that. She said, yeah, and also she's dead. It's like,
okay.
Yeah, it's like, where the hell? Yeah, you said, where did that come from? You know, so but I think just kids, they're just, I guess they're just like big sponges and they just pick up everything around them and you just,
yeah.
Yep, scary. Definitely.
You know, whenever I think of your, you know, your daughter in your house, I'm wondering, how are your spiders doing?
Do you know, they do, one of them shed his skin has got a fair bit bigger now, actually. They're doing really well.
Spiders?
Actually,
wait,
they're doing really well.
Wait, spiders shed their skin?
Oh, don't show your ignorance.
I thought snakes, it's not only snakes
they,
did that. I didn't.
They have exoskeletons. How do you expect them to grow if they don't shed their skin?
I don't know.
My neighbor
Come on.
Showed me this this video of some large bug crawling in her light fixture in her living room. It's like, oh, what is that?
Oh, God.
Like, that was creepy.
Yeah, I
know.
We
have a house full of odd things. But, yeah, I mean, my daughter, she'd always wanted tarantulas. So we just back into Christmas, we got her a pair of
spiders.
Pink-toed tarantulas. They're only babies at the moment. But, they're kind of sweet. They are kind of sweet. We love them.
Just as cute as getting a pair of, like, turtle doves would have been, you know. It's the same thing, right? Ugh,
no, she,
so
she wants a ferret now, for God's sake. I mean, it's never-ending.
They're cute.
Never-ending.
Ferrets are cute and cuddly. I agree with a ferret. Get a ferret. Although they do steal things.
Are you cute?
Socks. And they kind of
they,
smell, too. But,
they can... Well, no, because you can get them now. They actually remove... They neuter them and remove their scent glands. So they just do. They don't smell. You don't get the smell. Interesting ferret. We should have ferret corn. Interesting ferret fact is the females are on heat. They're on heat until they mate, and if they don't mate, it actually drives them crazy to the point which it kills them, because they're just literally on heat for that length of time, and that's why they have to neuter them. But there you go. Fascinating. We'll have to ferret fact corner.
I like ferret corner. It's almost as good as our fruit fly corner, but you ran out of fruit fly facts, so
there's about eight fruit fly facts and that was it, you know.
They were pretty interesting though, I will say. Well, we are just about out of time for our first segment, and I want to thank you so much for coming on the show, Jennifer. And
okay,
thank you
for having me.
Well, don't run
yeah, thank
that.
You for joining
can you tell us?
Us.
Can you tell us where we can find you online?
I am on Amazon.com. It's like Amazon.com/author/Jennifer Jo Fay. Right, that's it. Yeah.
She's on Amazon.
I'm on and I'm on CreateSpace too, if I got that for paperback. I've done 59 books so far.
We do have
59.
Your links put up on our Facebook. On our Facebook
okay,
page,
great.
We have your links put up. So if anybody wants to stalk Jennifer, they can go there and do it. And again, thank you so much for coming on the show, and we will definitely have to have you back. You have to promise to come back and see us.
Oh, definitely.
Yay.
Okay.
Fantastic. Okay. Thank you so much, Jennifer. It's been an absolute pleasure, and we will speak to you again very, very shortly.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank
you have
you.
A great evening.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye bye. What awesome guest. Love the reading as well. I said he just brought back some very happy memories of train journeys and bus journeys to school as a teenage boy. So on that happy note, we're going to spin into the break, and then we'll be back with Jeff Strand pretty much. Oh, we've got Becky. I nearly forgot her again. She's in trouble now.
Uh-oh, you're going to hear it now.
We will be... I know. We will be...
The Panic Punkroom Radio Show is sponsored by Hellbound Books, purveyors of all manner of dark fiction. You can find the publisher along with links to all their available works across platforms at hellboundbookspublishing.com. Hellbound Books is proud to be the first in the indie publishing business with their very own app on both Google Play and the App Store. In the mood for something steamy to read, check out new erotica author Jennifer Lynn's website at jenniferlynnerotica.com. You can find James at his website, www.jameslongmore.com, and Xtina has an author page found on the Hellbound website. Don't forget to follow the Panic Room Radio Show on social media. Our Facebook page, Unofficial The Panic Room Radio Show, Twitter at Panic Room Radio, our YouTube channel, The New Panic Room Radio Show, and come visit our website at www.panicroomradio.com.
Squeezing a bit of Alice Cooper while sticking to my disco theme, which I think is pretty clever, actually. What do you think, Xtina?
Definitely clever, but and this is awful. I consider myself a huge Alice Cooper fan, and I did not know what I had no idea. I was like, oh my God, I don't know this song. So,
yeah,
and
your ignorance is
album.
Shining through tonight, isn't it?
Yeah, I know.
Shining
God,
through.
I need.
Call yourself a fan.
And I have all of his albums too. I do, and I have the one that's on. I just not. I don't know. I have no. I'm gonna hang my head in shame. Yeah, I know.
It's called
I don't know.
Disco Bloodbath Boogie Fever. If you want to look it up.
Not really.
I'm not sure which album it was on, but there you go. Oh, it was on another. It was on an album. I don't know which one, but at least I knew that much. So there you
it
go.
It was on an album. Yeah.
It was on an album by Alice Cooper. There you go. Hey, I mean, it was, you know, it was there. It was all full on. I mean, the our closing song is a good old. It's actually a Village People tune. So.
Oh, yay!
Was, hey. It's disco night. What's wrong with that? You know,
nothing.
So,
absolutely
hey,
nothing.
You know, and I we do joke. You know, I did pretend to have forgotten Becky earlier, but how could we? How could we? I don't know if she's in waiting or not. Could that be her?
Oh,
let's
hey.
See if it is. Shall we?
Looks like it's time to review something. Oh no!
Oh, no.
Oh, howdy there, y'all.
Hey y'all, what
you
doing?
Come on. Join in.
How are you?
We're good. Oh, hold on. Hold on. So, Becky, how are you this evening?
Well, I was fine until y'all started talking about spiders.
I know, right?
Oh.
Thanks. They're awful.
We love our little spiders.
Oh
yeah.
Sorry, moving on from arachnids. What have you got to review for us this evening, Medea?
The book is called Leary Lane, and it's by Lori Lopez. It's self-published. You can find it on Amazon. This is a ghost story, but unlike any you've ever heard before. There are so many twists in this book. It really keeps you on your toes. You'll want to laugh and cry and scream. It is an absolute thrill ride. She is an absolutely amazing writer. I don't think there has been anything that I have read by her that I did not love. Absolutely. You can really envision what she writes when you read it. The characters are so lifelike, and they show such emotion. The setting and description really makes you feel like you're a part of the book, and that's part of its charm. It's a delightful tale, and it's one you won't forget. I have actually read this twice now.
Wow, awesome.
Yeah.
And it's a ghost story, you say. I love ghost stories. I think that's,
yes.
They scare me the most. They really do. So is it super scary? Would it, you know, creep me out?
There's parts of it that will, yes. But it's really, it's just really, really good. I mean, I don't know how to describe it. It's not like, Jeff's book, Sick House, with the ghost.
Mm-hmm.
It's a totally different feel to it. There's a young woman, and she's looking for answers. Her sister has disappeared, and she's looking for answers, and she goes on this kind of mission to find something that she's forgotten about, and she just knows that it's at this place. And so it's about what all she goes through and the different ghosts that live at the different houses that she goes to. And it takes place on Halloween. And, I mean, you really want to read this. You really do.
Awesome. I do now that you're...
I do.
And how many Becky stars does it get?
Oh, 9, easily.
Woo!
9.
That's good.
No, is that the same as 9?
No.
No, it's 9.
That's
got 9. 9.
Oh, my God.
Okay, it's 9 Becky Styles.
9 and a poem. 9 and a poem.
In a poem, yes.
A poem. A poem. I like poems.
Becky James is getting better.
9 poems.
Every week. Every week when he says a fan, he's getting better at it every time. He's going to start saying that.
Scary, isn't it? It's scary.
Before long, you're not going to need me. You'll just have James.
He's just going to say he's fine all the time.
I can just pretend to be you. If ever you're ill, we can still have Review Corner, and I'll be you, which means that you're going to have to start sort of mastering my accent, so we can all sort of interchange.
Wasn't our guest last week when M-Maybe was on and she was doing your accent, oh my God, that was adorable. I can't even pretend.
Oh, yeah.
I can't even try. I'm awful at accents. Even when I try, I'm just bad at them. But she was so cute. She really was.
Yeah.
She's a hoot. She was a hoot.
The best thing I could do would be to run around and call everybody a wanker. So.
I like being bloody. I like saying bloody. Yeah. Bloody hell. I like saying that. I mean, I can't.
Oh, bloody
can't
hell.
Accent,
yeah.
But,
well, I'm saying,
yeah.
I mean, you know, wanker is he's pretty much a Southern England expletive. You know, we kind of use it a little bit up north, but not as much.
Yeah.
Not as much, but there you go. You know, so it's a
well,
regionality
and our swearing. I guess I'm going to have to take lessons then.
Yeah,
yeah.
You
won't be alone.
Goodo. So anyway, Becky, thank you so much for joining us. We've got Jeff Strand coming up. I think he's waiting, listening to the listening to all the shenanigans. Probably, you know, getting bored now. So I know
Becky
I am.
Becky might want to say hi to Jeff. She's the one who introduced me to his writing. I read his book Blister the first time because Becky was like, you have to read it.
I remember
and...
that. Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
Oh,
okay,
yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, we'll have the audience cheer. We'll bring him in. Jeff, are you there, sir?
I am there. Hello, everyone.
Good.
Hi.
Becky wanted to say hi.
Hello, Becky.
Hi, Jeff. How are you?
Doing good. How are you?
He's fine. Yes.
He's fine.
We're all fine.
I knew Christina was going to say that.
It gets better every time you say it. It really does. But I did want to say, while I had both of you, you know, that I definitely thank Becky for introducing me to Jeff Strand's books, because now I badger everybody. I seriously do. And you know how some people you tell, you know, oh, my God, you have to read this book. And you know that they're kind of just, you know, being like, okay, yeah, whatever. But no, I'm like one of those people who are going to like climb on you like a spider monkey and like shove it in your face and be like, no, seriously, you have, what, are you picturing that or something?
Oh my God, that's so wrong.
Do you know, I was just picturing you sitting in a tree flinging poop at people, to be honest. That's where my brain went. But moving on.
Please don't picture.
Oh, God.
And then we have James's poo for the evening.
There you go, poop
there
reference.
We got
there you go.
Quickly.
It had to be done. Had to do. Oh, to be fair, it was extremely throwing poop around. I mean, you know. So anyway, thank you for joining us, Becky. We're going to say because we're fed up with you now. So we will see you. We'll see you next week. Okay. Bye. Oh, you know, she does build a part up. So, Jeff, how are you this evening, sir?
I'm doing great.
Good. Thank you for joining us. I know Eckstein has been literally beside herself because you've been on the show. So it's an absolute deal. I think last time you were on, I didn't get to talk to you. So I think we had technical issues. So howdy. How are you? it's a delight.
Howdy.
And yeah, Eckstein, she literally does plug away with your books.
Jump around.
I
do.
I'm
a monkey.
She does listen. She's not flung poop yet, but that's probably going to happen.
No, I do, because I, you know, okay, when he was on the show the first time, I had read one book, and it was amazing. I thought it was great. But since then, I've read, like, I don't know, a gazillion. Have you had a gazillion books out? Because I think that I've read a gazillion now, and they are all
probably
good.
Probably not quite a gazillion, more closer to a trillion, but...
Well, there you go. And I can say that, you know, and they're all different. That's the, you know, the cool thing. So you would not get bored, James, because they all are different. The humor is what I loved in the beginning, was the humor, and I thought that was amazing. And then there was one book that, you know, he actually said was sad. So I was like, I don't know if this is going to be as good, because, you know, the humor isn't as overpowering as everything. But it was, I got done with it, and I told everybody, oh, my God, I think that was my favorite one. But the thing is, as I say that after every single one I read, I'm like, oh, my God, I think this is my favorite. And then I read another one, and I'm like, oh, my God, I think this was my favorite. So I'm not a reliable source, I guess, or something. But they all are different, and that is the really cool part. And you were here to talk about your book, Sick House, which just came out last month, and I read it, and I loved it, and I can't wait to get the paperback. So when is that coming out, mister?
The paperback will be out pretty much any day now. It's been approved on Amazon. I'm waiting to get a proofing copy so I can actually hold a printed copy and flip through it and see if I screwed anything up. But then it should go live right after that.
Awesome. I can't wait, because it's definitely a book I'm going to have on my shelf. I have a couple of them right now, and that one has to go there because I love scary stuff. I love ghost stories. I think that's probably my favorite of, like, horror books would be, you know, ghost story. And Sick House is definitely a ghost story. Tell us a little bit more about it.
Well, I had, you know, it was one of those things. I try to write in a lot of different horror subgenres, and I had never done a ghost story, mostly because they're generally quiet books, and my stuff does not tend to be quiet literary type fiction. Mm-hmm. So ghost story wasn't really my top choice, just because I, you know, tended to write the loud, obnoxious stuff. But I came up with basically the idea of combining a ghost story with a really brutal home invasion story, and then I had Sick House. So it's a ghost story, but it's much more on the violent, intense side than the softly creepy type of book.
Right. And I have to admit, those kinds, the creepy ones where you're, you know, looking over your shoulder the whole time, I love them because they're really scary, but at the same time, I think they scare me too much. I mean, I would be the kind of person who, I can't sleep tonight. There's no way. I mean, so, and Sick House was, yeah, it was very much in your face, and it started right away. I mean, there was not even a build-up. The action started right away, and it never stopped. That was the cool part, and I love the ending. It was a great book. I could actually see a sequel. Will there be a sequel to Sick House?
Probably not, but there might be.
Who knows?
It's like there are lots of books where I have ideas for sequels that I probably will never write. I generally don't do a sequel unless the book was conceived as a series. So, like Wolf Hunt, I knew that I was going to bring back the characters, and the Andrew Mayhem book was conceived as a series from the beginning. But other stuff, it's like, is there going to be a sequel to Blister? There could be, but probably not. Generally, once I'm done with a book, I don't return to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, with Blister, I loved that book so much, and it was so great on its own. I don't know if a sequel would ever do it justice. I really don't. I still remember the review I wrote for that, and I started out, the title of the review was, "Now That's How You Write a Book." It was just, it had everything, and I laughed out loud, and it was amazing. I loved it so much, and that made me a Jeff Strand fan for life, and so I'm the one who's, you know, sending you creepy messages saying, you know, when are you going to write a new book? When are you, you know, you have to put them out faster because I'm reading, I'm going through them too fast. And I fear that pretty soon I won't have anything left to read of yours. So you have to start writing faster.
So I think if ever Jeff goes missing in a snowstorm, we'll also come to look at your house. It'll be at Xtina's house,
yes.
Chased to bed with his ankles broken. So you've been warned.
Yeah, I'm not going to chop them off. No hobbling, but I can't say too much about the, you know, bashing them in or something. I know that there was a character in his Wolf Hunt series that I if I could have found him to, you know, demand he bring this character back to life or something, I would have done it. I was that upset. I'm like, no, you can't kill him. I'm not going to say who it was in case people are listening because that's a spoiler, but it did very much upset me that, you know.
Yep. I apologize for that.
I love. You should. So, do you have a reading for us from Sick House?
I do. And this is from Sick House. And it's the prologue, so there's no build-up required.
Okay.
Gina Atherton would never, ever harm a living creature, but that didn't mean she wouldn't play with its bones after it was dead. She covered her living room table with several layers of newspaper and set out her collection of skeletons. Two cats, a small dog, a squirrel, a rat, and a snake, along with a deer skull. The rat, snake, and deer bones she'd bought from a taxidermy shop. The cats and squirrels she'd found mostly intact by the side of the road. She'd taken them home and let nature do the rest. She couldn't remember how she'd gotten the dog. Now the fun part, mix and match. Maybe she'd make a snake with a rat's head, or a dog with a squirrel's head, or a deer head with eight cat legs. So many possibilities. Once they were done, Gina would bury them in the flower garden. She smiled at the thought of them being uncovered, whether it was soon after she moved away or years after she was dead. Gina was a realist. She knew that the next people who lived in this house were unlikely to shout, "Oh my God, it's a cat-legged deer head! What an amazing scientific discovery!" It was satisfying enough that they'd wonder what kind of deranged person would bury bones like this. She loved to think that they'd question her sanity. Her sister wouldn't appreciate this. Her sister didn't like her acting crazy. But Gina didn't have to tell her about the bones, did she? It amused her to picture somebody lying in bed, staring at the ceiling, thinking, a crazy lady used to live here. Maybe they'd worry that she'd never left. Not a legitimate worry, of course, but a small nagging one that they couldn't quite dismiss. Though she knew this made her a bad person, it delighted her even more to think of a child needing to be comforted by his or her parents. Is the woman who buried the bones still here? Of course not, honey. Is she hiding under my bed? You know she isn't. What if she's in my closet? She's not, I promise. Please go to sleep. It's late and you have school tomorrow. But I'm scared. Gina looked at the bones strewn on her table and clapped her hands in glee. So very many possibilities.
That was awesome.
That is the prologue to Sick House.
I like that. That's great. I'm going to have to try and catch a free copy, I think.
I love the, it's a cat-legged deer head. That was good. So
yeah.
So creepy, though. Yeah. No, I love
that
book.
I mean, it paints an immediate picture about the young girl's state of mind, I think, which is brilliant.
Like I said earlier, little girls are creepy, even if they're not little girls. Women, we're just creepy and
they are
evil. Yeah.
Yep.
Well, you know,
here's a funny
zoology story. Now, you know, if ever there was such a thing, when I was back at university, my university days, there was a story. I think it was a year or two above my year. A bunch of students got lots of parts of different insects and literally spent hours and hours and hours gluing all these things together and actually presented them to the entomology professor. And this guy then spent like 6 months of his time trying to get this thing classified. And he was all excited that he finally discovered a new species and it was going to be caught, oh, named after him and all the rest of it, because they'd done such a good job of cobbling this thing together. I'm not sure how he found out or whether they finally said something to him, but yeah, he wasted 6 months of his career trying to make something with that. But it was, I mean, this is the thing. I mean, you know, when you get some of the insects, you know, it can be as much, you know, just a different number of what do you call them, bristles on their head or something that can define what's a different species. But yeah, anyway, this is my little unfunny zoology story there. But it's relevant. It's relevant.
Yeah,
maybe,
sure.
maybe those kids
because
went on
afterward
to sort of...
he was a bitter man driven to madness and did horrible things.
Maybe he did the same. Maybe
story as a villain.
It could be. Maybe he tracked the students down in later life and did the same to them. Cobbled their bodies together into one grotesque creature. There you go.
Yeah.
there's
so we should edit this part out of the podcast and do that as a book.
I think we should. We should co-write that, Jeff, if you're up for that.
All right, let's do it.
Okay, you're on.
I have a question for Jeff.
All right.
Because I'm always curious with my own writing, what somebody likes the best. You know, there's many times that, you know, I write poetry and somebody will be like, oh my God, I loved this one. And it's not one that I liked. As a matter of fact, I didn't like it at all. And so it's interesting to find out. So out of the books that you've written, what has been your favorite?
I think it's a tie between Blister and Cyclops Road.
I love that answer because they are two of my favorites.
No,
that's
they're
awesome.
All your favorites, Xtina. They're all
I know,
your favorites.
But that's true. But these are like...
Don't say that.
Okay. I have my arm up, like, over my head, and those two are at the very, very, very tippy top. They are, both of them. So that's
if
awesome.
I had to pick one, if you said a tie was cheating, I would probably give a slight edge to Cyclops Road.
I think I would, too. I would, too. It seemed to have a little more... depth maybe than Blister did, even though Blister was way funnier. I mean, I laughed out loud so many times. And there were times that I laughed, and it was like a subtle thing. It wasn't like a huge, you know, and there were many times I was thinking, I wonder if everybody gets this or if I'm just weird or something or I'm laughing at this.
Yeah,
but
I think it's probably just weird.
Whatever.
Yeah, that would be my vote as well, to be honest. Weird or drunk, one of the two.
You know, we're going to start calling this the Panic Room. It's just a pick on Xtina Room or something because... James,
yeah, that's
really
a great
good.
Name. I love it. Yeah, let's go for that, shall we?
I don't care for it too much. Okay. On the flip side of that, do you have something that you know, is your least favorite that you've written?
I think probably if you go back to the really early ones, I'm not as proud of them as the others. Fortunately, when I started writing, you know, these days I love self-publishing, but when I started, it was, you know, it didn't exist. It existed, but you paid thousands of dollars and no one respectable did it. So what happened was that the terrible books I wrote got rejected. So at a time when I thought they were amazing, brilliant works of art, they were terrible, never got published. So I don't have any that I have to be humiliated by because they are printed out in a box in a closet and will never be seen. So I'm fortunate in that I don't have any books where I'm just like, oh, don't read that one. That one's awful. But, you know, the early ones, How to Rescue a Dead Princess is a goofy fantasy spoof. And it's got, I think it has a lot of really funny stuff in it, but it also tries way too hard.
Mm-hmm.
It is like a textbook example of a book that's trying in every sentence to be straining to be funny. So it's like whether the humor was appropriate or not, whether I could come up with a good joke or not, it's like, I'm going to write the funniest book of all time. And you can see me trying to write the funniest book of all time, but... you can definitely see me trying too hard in that one. So that's not one that, you know, if someone says, what should I start with? That is not in my top 10 list, but
yeah.
You know, it's got some chuckles in it. So
I'm curious because when Becky told me I needed to read, you know, Blister, I remember looking at the cover and reading what it was about, and it's classified as horror, but I wouldn't really consider maybe Wolf Hunt, I think, was way bloodier than the Wolf Hunt 2, anyway, was bloodier than I think Wolf Hunt and some of the other stuff, but it just doesn't really feel like, you know, horror to me.
The problem when you write like me and you kind of bounce around genres a lot is, mm-hmm. from a marketing perspective, that's tough. So it's like Blister is horror enough that I can call it horror and people aren't going to say, you know, that's bait and switch, you've lied to us. You're not reading Blister and getting a historical romance. It's got enough horror elements that I'm not lying to people. But yeah, I try to market stuff so that's going to sell. So Cyclops Road the horror element is very small. And I didn't want to call it a horror novel because it's not a horror novel, but it's got kind of a dark cover, title Cyclops Road. It's enough so that someone who likes my work will actually buy it. Because when you go too far out, I did a book called Kumquat, which is just a flat-out romantic comedy, and it was...
I loved it. I have that book in paperback now. That's an awesome book. Although
it's one of my favorites of my books, but it sold really badly because it didn't tie into what I'm known for at all.
Yeah. Still a great book.
So there's a marketing element where it's like something like Blister, you know, I promote it as a horror novel, and it's enough of a horror novel that I don't get yelled at, but, you know, I wouldn't take Blister and try to promote it as a quirky romance because I would be going back to a day job, so.
No, and what I loved about Cyclops Road was that, okay, when I started it and I, you know, okay, Cyclops, I'm not one for fantasy. I'm really not because, I have to kind of believe it kind of before, you know, anyway. So I'm, you know, reading and in my mind the whole time I'm going, there's not going to be really a Cyclops. This, you know, this woman is just crazy or whatever and everybody's just going along with it. I don't understand why, you know, and I'm not going to say whether or not there was a Cyclops, but by the time you get, you know, halfway through or even, you know, I am just so sucked into the story that it didn't matter anymore. There could have been like 20 Cyclopses all doing a jig or something, and I was so immersed into the story and into the characters that, you know, anything could have went, and that's what I thought was so cool, is that I was there. And I would definitely, I'm going to say this about every single one of your books, but I could see that as a sequel. We could have a sequel of that book. I would not mind. So.
Yeah, that was one where I, you know, was as I was writing, I was thinking there could be a sequel to this.
Definitely,
would be
the
fun,
way
which
it ended.
I would never do.
Yeah.
I will never do this, but I would like the idea of treating that one sort of like The Hobbit. As just almost just a prologue, and then having the sequel to Cyclops Road being this massive Lord of the Rings style epic. But I'll never do that. But it'll be fun.
It had a great ending, and that's, you know, why I say the sequel, because it sounded like there could have been a lead up to, you know, the next adventure with
yeah.
everybody. So I loved that. I'm anxious to do 11 questions with you because the last time we had you on the show, I did 11 questions, and now these are all new 11 questions, which actually happened to be like 12 of them or so because James likes to, you know, make fun of me and have me say 11 questions when there's really more. But would you do 11 questions with me?
I sure will.
Right. Okay. Let's do the jingle.
And now... 11 questions.
Okay, number one, best or worst movie you ever saw?
Best is Shaun of the Dead. Worst is...
Yay!
Worst is kind of tough, darn. I'm going to go with Rob Zombie's Halloween.
Oh, right
as
through
a
my
movie,
heart.
One of the only movies to actually make me mad. It's probably not objectively the worst movie I've ever seen, but it was the most negative reaction I've ever had to a movie.
Wow. Okay. I'll still read your books, even though that's a, you know, if I had a buzzer right now, I'd be going buzz anyway.
Bit of controversy there.
What was the first grown-up novel that you read?
Probably Christine by Stephen King.
Good answer. What's your favorite cuss word?
Fudge.
That's not a cuss word.
It is in my world.
If you say it right, yes it is.
We'll let it slide. Our show is rated R, so you can curse if you want to. Anyway, what is the worst way you can imagine yourself dying?
Suffocation.
Oh, that's a good one. Suffocation or drowning. Anything where I can't breathe, it's just horrible. What was your very first pet?
A miniature schnauzer named Cassie.
That's cute. Who is your biggest influence, either in writing or in life generally?
Douglas Adams.
Another good choice.
Yeah.
Eckstein doesn't know who he is, so move on, Eckstein.
I don't. I wasn't going to say anything.
Move
so,
on. Like, you have no idea.
I'm three for three tonight.
Yes, you are. Well done.
If you were God for a day, what would you do?
Wow. Something good, probably.
Good answer. Something good. Probably, though. He ended it with probably.
Yeah.
So it's possible he wouldn't.
I'd have to
do.
Think about it.
Okay, who or what is the crappiest horror supernatural being? Horror or supernatural being. There we go. There's a slash there. Okay.
I kind of like them all. I don't want to. Am I allowed to pass?
Sure.
Yeah,
I don't want
to offend any fans of any particular monster.
Yeah,
bad
you know,
enough
I can't
that I've already crapped on Rob Zombie. So.
I know. I don't know if I'm talking to you ever again. So, if it were legal to do so, would you eat human flesh?
I do it when it's illegal. So yeah.
Oh.
Excellent.
Yeah, you always have to be careful, you know, asking these questions to horror writers because, you know, they could tell you something like they're barbecuing up in the backyard right now. Who knows?
Yeah.
This question. Who is your favorite member of the British royal family?
They're all equally great in their own way.
Very diplomatic.
I forget which one is Prince Harry. If he doesn't invite Trump to his wedding, then he'll be my favorite.
Yeah. I don't think he's going to. I don't think he's going to.
If he doesn't and he invites Obama, then, yeah, he becomes my top choice.
Awesome.
Which franchise do you like best? Halloween, Friday the 13th, Elm Street, Hellraiser, or Saw?
Halloween.
Which probably ties
into my acting.
So we're digging deep now. We're digging deep.
Yeah. Okay, fine. I guess I will allow your hatred of the Rob Zombie Halloween, even though I liked it. Okay, what is your least favorite part of the writing process?
Reviewing the final proofing copy when I can't really make any changes. I actually really enjoy the proofreading process up until the point where you no longer have the power to actually change anything you want.
So it's basically
when they send the printed book, which looks just like the final book, and if you find an actual mistake, you can change it, but you can't change it just because you like a different word choice. So once it's 99.9% locked in and you still have to proofread it, that's the part I like the least.
Mm-hmm.
Good answer. And this question is just for me. It's a bonus question. Baseball or stamp collection?
Baseball.
Woo! That's a great answer.
Wrong answer.
No, it's a perfect one. So.
Mm.
Yeah,
I've listened
all
to the show before, so I know what the proper answer was there. So.
Oh, okay. Awesome. I know, and tomorrow I'm going to be really excited, and I probably won't be around too much after noon. I think it's when the game starts, and so everybody leave Xtina alone because she will be busy drooling over baseball players. So.
Well, just make sure you set your alarm so you wake up in time for that.
Oh, whatever. I get up before noon most days.
some days.
I know. You know, I'm not as bad as I used to be. I think it was like last year where I was aiming toward, you know, just cutting out mornings altogether and waking up at like, you know, noon. Noon is good. But I'm doing better. I get up at like 9:30. I do.
Well done.
Anyway, we are just about out of time for our show, and I want to thank you so much for coming on, Jeff, and you have to promise to come back. You know, I already have you booked again, and now that I said it on the air, wherever we are, you can't back out, so you have to
It is legally binding, so there you
exactly.
go.
Exactly.
Just bump next week's guest. I'll be back.
Woo!
Good man.
And we have all of Jeff's links put up on our Facebook page, so if anybody wants to stalk him, they can go there and do it. And go out and buy his book, Sick House. It's on Amazon. And, again, I thank you so much for coming on the show.
Well, thank you for having me back.
Thank you, Jeff. It's been an absolute pleasure. I shall look forward to speaking to you again. If you're already booked on, that will be that'll be awesome.
All right.
So, I'm afraid it is that time when we have to say goodnight, Xtina.
Goodnight, Xtina.
Goodnight.
I'm just a gigolo, and everywhere I go, people know the part I'm playing. Paid for every day, selling each romance. What they're saying. And there will come a day when you will pass away. What will they say about me? When the end comes, I know they'll say just a gigolo. Life goes on without me. I'm just a gigolo, and everywhere I go, people know the part I'm playing. Paid for every day, selling each romance. What they're saying. And there will come a day, and you will pass away. Well, what will they say about me? When the end comes, I know they'll say just a gigolo. Life goes on without me, 'cause nobody can call me this. Nobody can call me, 'cause I'm so sad and lonely. Sad and lonely, sad and lonely. Won't some sweet mama come and take a chance with me? 'Cause I ain't so bad, and I sing her sweet love song all of the time. The one and only one for me. I ain't got nobody. And if nobody can call me sick, nobody can call me. Nobody can call me sick. Nobody can call me. Nobody can call me sick. Nobody. Hey! All right. Yeah. Play a piano, boy.
nobody can call me this. Nobody can call me, 'cause I'm lonely, lonely. Won't some sweet mama come and take a chance with me, 'cause I ain't so bad.